proceed to the sixth case of the day, the United States v. Lundy. Mr. Williams.
Good morning, Your Honor. Stephen Williams for the defendant, Mr. Lundy. Your Honors, the defendant's primary contention in this case boils down to an assertion that he was given ineffective advice during the plea negotiations stage, which occurred during the course of essentially one day at the 11th hour on a Friday before this case was scheduled to go to trial on the following Monday. It was deficient in that this 11th hour negotiation contained a recommendation or rather the conveyance of a supposed concession on the part of the government that evidently induced this plea. Mr. Lundy had been insisting on going to trial all the way up until the Friday before. He was insisting on going to trial that morning. Numerous attempts had been made by counsel and previous counsel who had had a conflict of interest on the case to induce Mr. Lundy to engage in plea negotiations, to accept a plea agreement that was proffered, and he didn't change his mind until, as counsel admitted in the hearing, in the motion to withdraw his plea, he was told about these supposed concessions that induced the plea.
You know, given the fact that he didn't testify at the hearing on the motion to withdraw the plea, how can we know the effect of these various incidents on him? I mean, the argument asks us to assume that Lundy was persuaded by Alvarado's presence and by, you know, this worthless concession. Now, Lundy didn't even provide an affidavit. So,
Well, I think there is ample evidence in the record, Your Honor, and I certainly entertain the court's question and point to that. This question was specifically addressed by the district court below, and counsel was asked at the conclusion, after he had been questioned on direct and cross-examination by the court, he asked, from what you've said, I gather at the end of your contacts with him, it was still a case where he was going to trial, correct? I think that's yes, I think so. So the question is, what changed? And counsel answers exactly. You're asking me? Question, yes. And the answer
Who else can he ask if Lundy won't testify?
Well, and he provides the answer, though. And if there's anyone who would be in a position to know, it would be his attorney who's testifying there at that point in time.
It remains pretty unclear exactly what was represented, wasn't it? Lundy? I mean, we don't have Lundy, and we don't exactly know what was represented.
Well, we do know what was represented because the concession.
Just say it's a concession. Do we have the specifics of the concession, how it would have impacted a potential sentence and all the rest?
We do, because we can backtrack from what his counsel said at the conclusion of that colloquy, and if I may, Your Honor, what counsel says changed his mind, and the concession that he articulated was, I continued to have discussions with the government and to some degree with Agent Larson. They were encouraging me to plea. I wanted them to. There were discussions that they didn't want to change the indictment. And ultimately, I think it got down to pretty much what I said. And I think I put on the record in our plea that they were saying that there were tacit concessions on their part as far as how good their evidence was. And, of course, sometimes the evidence you see less at sentencing than you do at full trial. Well, we then look back to what, in fact, those tacit concessions were, and those appear on page 5 of the transcript of the change of plea. So we know exactly what the concession was because it is set forth at his change of plea. And what was set forth by the government attorney during that change of plea is the issue in this case for sentencing purposes focuses on two things, and that is the amount or weight of controlled substance and the type of controlled substance. And the type of controlled substance can be established in several different ways. The most obvious, the most provable, the most believable, if you will, are admissions that the defendant has made in statements to people who heard him say such things in Knox County Jail. And then it goes on and says, and this is in part, I think, what makes this a sham, but the defendant obviously reserves the right to argue that those weights and those admissions tend to limit his exposure to the sentence that he might face. So that essentially his own admissions are the evidence that, in a sense, is the best evidence in this case of what the weight is and what the amounts are. That is the concession. It's right there in black and white. It is referred to on two occasions during the change of or the motion to withdraw his change of plea, and it amounts to nothing. What it says is we are agreeing that the best evidence we've got, which is no surprise, is what the defendant said himself to these jailhouse snitches. We know that we can probably rely on that at least being true. But it goes on to say the defendant can assert, if he wants to, that that somehow limits his exposure. And anyone who has dealt in this realm knows that that does not limit his exposure in any way whatsoever. They don't say that we're not going to rely on anyone else's testimony. There's no concession that his testimony is what's going to establish relevant conduct. Quite to the contrary. What they concede is nothing. They concede that their best evidence is what the defendant himself has said, but they don't concede anything else. And this concession...
So, wait a minute. You know, now it's, you didn't intentionally mean to spin me, but I'm getting lost. Do we have no concession of any
it's
merit?
It's a sham concession, exactly.
So what then could have impact one's thinking? If the government is not making a concession, what has changed,
well,
Mr. Williams?
What has changed in Mr. Lundy's mind is what he has been told, is that this is a concession. He's not a lawyer. There's certainly been discussion in the briefing that, well, this is confusing. Well, we look to what it is. Mr. Lundy has been told by his attorney prior to walking in there, after having been pressured the entire day, that this is a concession, and they're going to make the concession. And, in fact, they make the quote-unquote concession. But the reality of the situation is it was not a concession. Now, Mr. Lundy believes it is.
We know he believes it. Why?
Because his attorney told him so. And his attorney said he told him.
What does his attorney say about that interpretation of what he told him?
Well, what his attorney says is that's what caused him to change his plea. And he says that beginning on page 24 of the hearing on the motion to withdraw plea, which is the quote that I referenced in response to the court's question. He also mentions it on page 19 of the transcript of the hearing to withdraw the plea, this same so-called concession. And his attorney says, it is clear, his attorney says, this is what changed. This is what caused him to plead. And we can look back and say, okay, if you're saying to us that this concession that was put on the record is what caused him to change his plea, that's pretty good evidence that that's what caused him to change his plea. It's coming from his attorney who was having confidential discussions with him and was the only other person there. We can backtrack now and easily look at what was the nature of the supposed concession. And the nature of the supposed concession was it's completely illusory. It does not exist. And if one's attorney is telling him that it does, that falls below the standards.
If we can cut to the chase, is it your position that the attorney told him that the government wasn't in a position to prove the amounts charged? Is that what was conveyed by the government in these various conversations to the defense counsel, which was then conveyed to the defendant who had been reluctant to plead?
No, I mean, he certainly, well, that much is unclear in terms of whether he said they cannot prove. But there is some evidence as to what was leading to these further discussions, and that is later on in the plea colloquy itself, the attorney says, worst case scenario, 10 years. And I don't think it's going to be that, but that's worst case scenario. That's additional circumstantial evidence of what might else have been explained. We know the substance of the concession. That tells you a little bit as to what he was explaining that concession may have meant, and it didn't mean that. We know it didn't mean that. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Mr. Williams. Mr. Cox?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, counsel Richard Cox on behalf of the United States. It seems to me in this case, Your Honors, and some of your questions to counsel focused on it, the evidence before Judge Mim, and that's what we need to focus on. He's the one who conducted an evidentiary hearing with regard to whether or not there was a fair and just reason to allow Mr. Lundy to withdraw his plea. And the only evidence before Judge Mim upon which he could make his determination was the testimony of two of his previous lawyers, one of whom was Mr. Alvarado, who was only there in the morning, and at the conclusion of that meeting, Mr. Lundy still wished to proceed to trial. Then there was a meeting in the afternoon between his attorney at that time, Mr. Iben, that eventually resulted in his guilty plea. And we don't know the effect of any of these conversations between Mr. Iben on Mr. Lundy because Mr. Lundy chose not to testify and offer any evidence. We don't know what he thought concession meant. We do know that Judge Mim conducted a very thorough guilty plea and went through all the sentencing ramifications, and Mr. Lundy said he understood them.
The thing that concerns me somewhat is that Iben implied he had extracted a valuable concession from the government, and of course it was a worthless concession. And until that very moment, Lundy had insisted on trial. So why isn't it ineffective assistance to fail to explain to Lundy that the concession is absolutely worthless?
I disagree that it was worthless, Your Honor, because, quite frankly, Mr. Lundy was charged with a conspiracy to distribute more than 5 kilograms of cocaine and more than 50 grams of crack, both of which, if he pled guilty to count one as it stood, subjected him to the mandatory minimums. Count two charged him with possession of more than 50 grams of crack with the intent to distribute, also subjecting him to a mandatory minimum. What the government allowed him to do was plead guilty to count one and argue at sentencing, challenge the government's evidence as to the weight, as to whether it even rose to the mandatory minimum, and whether or not the guidelines then would be higher or lower depending on that amount and the amounts determined. And I think concession, of course, doesn't come from the government's mouth. It comes from Mr. Iben's mouth during the hearing on the motion for to withdraw the guilty plea. And I think what was said to Mr. Iben, what was conveyed to him was, our evidence with regard to the weights. It comes from Mr. Wakefield, the person who was caught with the drugs, and what he says about his prior dealings with Mr. Lundy. But in addition, it comes from essentially a jailhouse snitch. And I think we all know who've practiced in this that there may be some room to play. Maybe the judge won't believe what was said. We didn't have surveillance. There weren't phone calls where Mr. Wakefield was ordering up supplies from Mr. Lundy. There wasn't seizures from Mr. Lundy. So there was a concession, if you want to use that term. I don't. It was an acknowledgement, I think, of the state of the government's evidence as opposed to a concession with regard to what amounts there would be. Because I don't think there's any question, as Judge Mim said, any suggestion that Mr. Lundy was pleading guilty and not knowing that that there was a significant dispute about the weights was completely refuted by the record. So I think in answer to that, to your question, Judge Rovner, if you want to use the term concession, I do think there was one from the government. It was more an acknowledgement about the state of its evidence as opposed to any inducement for the plea itself.
Now, did the district court evaluate the cumulative effect of the three factors? Alvarado's presence, Iben's angry outburst, and what was either a concession or a whatever you want to call
it. I can't say that he ever said, I'm considering the cumulative effect. He individually went through each of those factors. Of course, he found with regard to Mr. Alvarado that it was troubling to him. He shouldn't have been there. He probably shouldn't have spoken to Mr. Lundy at all. But when Mr. Alvarado left, Mr. Lundy was still insisting on trial, so that in terms of any effect on the guilty plea, that couldn't have affected it. With regard to the angry outburst, of course, that occurred in the morning. And again, we don't know what effect it might have had. When Mr. Alvarado left, he said everything had calmed down between all the parties. So I don't think the judge specifically went through and said, cumulatively, I find that there's either was an effect or was not an effect, but he did individually address each of the allegations that were in the motion, but of course we didn't hear Mr. Lundy testify.
Now that I've heard your argument, it occurs that if indeed we did send this back to Judge Mim, Mr. Lundy might be
potentially in worse shape?
He
could be. Potentially he could be in worse shape. Although, quite frankly, as it turned out for him, I think what Mr. Williams said when his lawyer said, worst case scenario, 10 years, have we just stayed with the drug amounts that everyone knew about at the time of the guilty plea, it would have been right around the mandatory minimum. What moved him up towards the 15-year range that he got was, of course, that he didn't get acceptance of responsibility, and the judge found that he had obstructed justice. And so that's really the difference in the sentence between the 10 years that Mr. Iben thought was a worst-case scenario and the sentence that was ultimately imposed. There was one other concession, which was there was a waiver of appeal, which we haven't raised on appeal, but he was specifically allowed to challenge the drug weights on appeal if he chose to, and of course he didn't choose to do that. He took the motion to withdraw account. So.
Scott,
yes, Your Honor.
I don't know if the record reflects this, but how did this discussion about a concession arise? What's the setting when the AUSA engages counsel? Just moments before?
As I understand it, Your Honor, the setting was the Friday afternoon before a Monday trial. There had been discussions between Mr. Iben, I think, testified that he had visited Mr. Lundy at the jail where he was incarcerated the Thursday night before and had gone over a plea agreement with him at that time. Then specifically on Friday morning, Mr. Lundy was brought to the federal courthouse in Peoria. He met with Mr. Alvarado and Mr. Iben in the morning and then later met in the afternoon with Mr. Iben and then ultimately decided to change his plea. Now, in terms of the conversations, I assume that there was give and take between the prosecutor and Mr. Iben over, I won't use the word concession because the government never said that, but in terms of discussions about what the government's evidence was as to the weights for which Mr. Lundy could be held accountable.
Did you make any inquiry into what built to this dialogue to a whatever it amounted to?
He did not, Your Honor. And in fact, he seems to there almost seems to be some sort of unspoken understanding, because when Mr. Iben says something along the lines of sometimes it's worse at when you go through trial than it appears at sentencing, or words to those effect, the judge says exactly. I mean, I think the parties, it seems to me, understood that the state of the evidence was in dispute, and perhaps Mr. Lundy could prevail at sentencing with regard to convincing Judge Mim that he should be held accountable for lesser weights. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Williams.
With my seconds remaining, Your Honor, I want to point out two things.
You will not be cut short, Mr. Williams.
I'm sorry?
You will not be cut short.
I appreciate that. Two things I think are very important. First of all, if he's allowed to withdraw his plea, he goes to trial. That's what he wants. So as to whether or not what effect it has on sentencing, I don't believe that's really at issue here. But more importantly, with respect to what was going on with negotiations, concessions as to, well, we charge 50 and 500, and that was all already in the plea agreement on Friday morning. So what's at issue is this additional supposed concession on Friday afternoon. He didn't want to plead guilty. The record is clear. It came from his prior counsel. It came from his counsel at the time that he didn't want to plead guilty until that change occurred, and that change was an illusory concession.
And is it your view that it's a possible scenario that counsel, the third counsel, the counsel at the end, was summarizing his last overview of the case in an attempt to encourage him to plead? Is that the bottom line there?
Well, he was probably doing that throughout the day on Friday, I believe.
That's why I was asking Mr. Cox about the context. I'm trying to get a sense of whether it was triggered by some last-minute dialogue between the AUSA and Mr. Iben that caused a reevaluation, that caused a communication to occur with the defendant. If the record doesn't reflect it, then it doesn't. But it's hard to get the setting sometimes. I understand the dynamics generally that goes on, but I wondered if we had any help on.
I believe we do. I mean, in answer to that specific question, I believe we do. I believe that Mr. Iben testified that he had gone back and had additional conversations, and this is reflected in his testimony, additional conversations with the agents and the prosecutors. and they were encouraging him to plea, and they were having, and they weren't going to dismiss any charges beyond what, or change the indictment rather, beyond what had already been discussed, but they were willing to make these tacit concessions. And then he goes back, and it's these tacit concessions, according to him, these new tacit concessions that were put on the record at the plea that caused Mr. Lundy to then change his mind.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Williams.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Cox. The case is taken under advisement, and the court will stand in recess.